Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Mike, and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. We're a 12-step meeting on the air, so sit back and relax, because you're about to hear a sample of the magic that can happen behind the doors of a 12-step meeting. We're speaking with young people who have found recovery before their addiction got the best of them, and as the result, their lives have been changed, and they get to share that message with us here tonight. And our first guest is Jenny. Jenny, welcome to Steppin' Out.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jenny. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jenny.
I'm just kind of going to jump in. I am...
With both feet, right?
With both feet,
there
yep.
There
I am originally from Minnesota. I have... My parents are still married. I have two older brothers. And I grew up kind of feeling like I was... I liked to be a loner a little bit. I used to sit and play alone quite a lot. I had a couple close... Well, I had one close friend, and that was about it. And I always felt a little awkward as a kid. I felt like I got teased a lot. And that I didn't have a ton of friends. So, but there wasn't anything in particular that was horrifying. You know, I grew up in a pretty good home with my parents who were around most of the time. It was just... as long as everything looked okay and seemed like it was okay, we got let alone. I found two girlfriends when I was 11 who I clicked with very quickly and intensely. And we were all a little kind of crooked, I guess.
what do you mean by that?
Well, when we first started hanging out, you know, we started smoking cigarettes and then we started... cutting ourselves with razors, and then it kind of jumped right into, we met a couple boys and started drinking with them.
And this is at 11?
Yep.
Okay. Can you talk, because we don't hear about it that often on the show, can you talk about the cutting a little bit? Because I think, unfortunately, that's become an epidemic of sorts.
I can talk about what it was like for me. I know, I didn't have anything traumatic going on. It was just kind of like I always felt a little like life wasn't full for me, like I was missing something.
And so what did the cutting do for you?
It gave me attention, I guess. You know, me and my two girlfriends would carve stuff into our arms. You know, I carved I love and the person I had a crush on at the time. And then we would go and hang around down by this beach where there was older lifeguards and kind of show them who they thought it was totally a freak job thing. But,
okay. So already at 11, you're beginning to do things for attention.
Yeah. And okay. It kind of, I guess, felt like we bonded together a little bit more.
Okay.
Which jumped right into, you know, we found a couple of guys who were already messing around with drugs and alcohol.
Now, were they around your same age or older?
One was around our same age. One was his older brother.
Okay.
But not much older, 2 or 3 years maybe. And at 12, you know, I had my first drink, and it was theirs too, I think. But for me, what happened is it gave me the camaraderie, I guess, that I felt like I was looking for. We used to go and hang around at my friend's house every day after school. Her mom was gone. Her mom was a pothead, and we, you know, would go and drink there and bring the boys over and hang around with them and screw around and have a lot of fun. It gave me kind of the sense of relaxation that I felt like I didn't have when I was growing up. I grew up with two older brothers who used to kind of practice the wrestling moves on me and everything.
Okay.
And I felt like I couldn't always defend myself. And when I had like my first... whole summer drinking, it was kind of like I could say, I finally was able to say what I wanted to say and do what I needed to do to take care of myself, and I didn't really care what other people thought anymore. And then the coolness factor came in because my friend's older siblings, brothers and sisters, we got to go hang around with them and get drunk.
Okay.
And I thought they were cool. But also that, because for me, that feeling of not feeling like I belonged was around for a long, long time.
Right.
And so 12, I had first drinks summer before eighth grade. You know, went into eighth grade, and it was, I finally found my in crowd. You know, we'd all meet before school, go smoke cigarettes, go smoke onesies if we, you know, had any pot, and then go to class and go to school and do our thing. And part of, for me with my family was, as long as everything seemed like it was okay to them, I could, I was kind of let go to do what I wanted to do on the side, and they would turn the other way.
Now, did you wear a mask in front of your family?
You mean like figuratively?
No, figuratively.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say so. I had, the two lies started when I was like, when I was 12, because I would lie to them about what was going on at my friend's house after school, and they didn't, they just took me at my word and that I was being honest with them. Because that's really, my parents grew up in homes where that kind of was the deal. And so they didn't, I had already started lying and they didn't really notice, I guess.
Right.
So it progressed along. I started hanging out with my friend's older siblings. I tried, and I was drinking on the weekends. We would get together, and then we found my friend's mom's stash of pot, who was a pothead. And we asked her if we could smoke pot with her, and she let us. And it all just started rolling from there.
Are you guys 13 at this point, or still 12?
Still 12.
Okay.
The summer after eighth grade, I started hanging around with a couple girls who were older than me, and I did my first line of crystal meth, dropped acid, and was drinking more during the week and on the weekends. And the crystal meth for me was kind of that. All my friends were smoking pot regularly. The crystal meth for me got me. And then I started dating my friend's older brother, who was dealing pot at the time, and then started dealing meth. And for me, that was kind of the clincher, because I got it all the time from then on. And by the time I was 14, I was, before I left my bedroom every morning, which I was getting up to go to school every morning, and I was taking advanced calculus, advanced physics, but before I even left my bedroom in the morning, I was doing a line, and at night trying to drink like Robitussin or NyQuil to go to sleep.
So even at the ages between 12 and 14, you were a very functional little pre-alcoholic and drug addict.
Yeah, and it was something that I had to do in order to keep doing what I wanted to do, because if, as long as my parents got what they wanted, which were the grades, I got to do what I wanted.
Okay.
And they didn't really ask any questions.
So it was like sort of an unspoken deal.
Right.
Okay.
And they didn't know what I was doing at all. They had no clue. It was kind of just they took me at my word.
Right.
So 14, I'm every morning getting up, doing a line, every couple hours, doing a line at night, drinking Robitussin or NyQuil to go to sleep. 15 and 16 were good. I mean, that's what I was doing on a regular basis. But what started to happen for me is there was a lot of weird stuff happening. My friends started having babies at 15. My best friend did.
Wow.
And, you know, a couple people got caught by the cops and ended up having to go to treatment. But I started to feel dead inside. Like, it slowly creeped up on me, but I started to feel like, by the time I was 16, I felt like I was a shell of a person. And, like, before, if I didn't have anything in my system, whether it was alcohol or drugs, I felt like I either wanted to scream or cry. And my dad got the brunt of that, because I just felt, I didn't know how to tell anybody what I guess I didn't feel like I had anything going on inside, but then I was in so much, I don't know what was going on, really. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like I wanted to scream or cry if I didn't have anything in me, because it's what made me feel normal, like I could function.
Right.
And I got sober at 17. So between 16 and 17, some creepy things happened. Every year while I was in high school, somebody would die from a drunk driving accident around Halloween, Christmas, and New Year's. And then my senior year, people that I drank with fairly regularly, one of my close friends broke his back on Halloween, in the summer. And then at Halloween, we were all partying together outside. It was crazy because we used to, like, break stuff and build big bonfires and burn tires of who knows, you know, whose tires they were. My friend stole a car. They were driving in the rain, and one of them died. And that kind of was the start of things just shutting down. I felt like at that point in time, I had problems with alcohol and drugs. I was working in a daycare center, doing lines in the bathroom with all my other friends who worked at the daycare center, and I would take care of these little children. There was a couple who had a couple little kids, and I went over there one day to take care of their kids. They asked me to babysit while they were drinking so that they could drink with their friends. And it hit me that either everybody in the world was getting up and taking a drink, dropping a pill, doing a line, doing something every morning to feel normal like I had to do before I left my bedroom, or there was something wrong, really wrong with me. As soon as it went in, I pushed it out of my head. And then my friend died. And one of the two girls that I was using with on a daily basis overdosed. She didn't die, but she just kind of, went off into her own little world. And also, like, physically for me, my gums started to disappear. I don't know if it was probably a combination of the drugs, and I was on so much meth that I was like brushing my teeth so hard that I didn't have any gums, and I had to get gum surgery.
They call that meth mouth, right?
No, I don't.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that.
It gets to the point where it literally rots your gums and your teeth out.
It was crazy.
It's not a pretty thing.
No, and I had to get surgery for it. They had to take skin out of the roof of my mouth and sew it on so that they could take my braces off, because they said if they were going to take them off at that point in time before I got the surgery, my teeth would fall over.
Mm.
But also from the surgery, because I had 5 surgeries, I got Vicodin. So I started taking prescription meds. I was drinking NyQuil and Robitussin on a daily basis that night to go to bed, and then getting up and doing lines all throughout the day.
Now, I know you said you were dying inside, but are you with all the terrible things that are going around you and in school and with your friends, unfortunately, starting to die off, basically, are you getting a sense, are you seeing yourself in the mirror figuratively and saying, there's something wrong here, I'm starting to have a problem with this drugs and alcohol thing, or are you not recognizing it yet at this point?
No, I knew there was something wrong.
Okay.
When I was babysitting those kids, and that was kind of the point where it hit me that I knew there was something wrong, really wrong with me. I already felt by that point in time like a shell of a person walking around, like I was kind of just almost like just a dead person walking the earth. I didn't feel like I had a soul.
But yet you couldn't stop yet.
No, because that was what every morning I woke up, that's what made me feel normal. And by that point in time, I wasn't even able to feel normal anymore, but that's what I could do to function.
Mm. Was it like always chasing that first high? Always hoping that you could get that same feeling that you got early on? Or are you just doing it for maintenance purposes at this point?
It was for maintenance purposes at that point. I think the chasing the high ended when I was about 16, and then my senior year, which I was 17, it was just to kind of feel somewhat normal so that I could function throughout the day. I knew I was graduating. I started to set up this little camping trip for when I graduated for a month long, up in the north woods of Minnesota to go detox myself.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Well, because it's funny, I look back in diaries now, and I had written down that I knew that I had a problem with drugs and alcohol, and then they needed to do something about it. And that was all I knew what to do at that point in time. I didn't know anybody in AA. I didn't know anybody in NA. I didn't know anything about the 12 steps.
Were you able to confide in anybody at this time, even any of your friends that you're drinking and drugging with?
No, but they had started to try and, I guess, protect me. They would try and, because I was dating this guy who was I got the drugs from. His sister I was really close with, and she would try and circumvent me from getting the stuff that I needed and wanted to function.
So are you getting a sense that you're starting to become a little bit worse than everybody else around you?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And the people that I was hanging around with, grew up in households where we got to get high with their parents. We got to drink with their parents. I would buy drugs from them sometimes. So it wasn't like the environment was, they were people who were able to drink alcohol regularly.
Right.
They had maybe some problems too of their own. But also it was crazy. It was just sad, and that's how I felt. But what happened is, like, I knew I had a problem. I felt like I was a walking dead person, and I'd set up this little camping trip for after I graduated. And really what happened is the last kind of 3 months before I was supposed to finish school, there wasn't anything big. I went out of town 2 weeks before my graduation, and it was supposed to be this 3-day weekend in Wisconsin where they have a big concert for 2 days, and I got a bunch of drugs and a bunch of alcohol and on a Wednesday, and the concert didn't start till Saturday. It was in Wisconsin, so we were driving there, and I finished everything that I had bought before we even left Minnesota to go to Wisconsin.
Okay.
When I got there, it was kind of, I mean, I always was doing things that I said I wasn't going to do, and then I did quite a few things that I said I wasn't going to do, one of which was trip by myself on acid, and then I also had done some random, like, I slept with somebody that I didn't know. I just grabbed him out of the crowd, which was just something that I wasn't, said I wasn't going to do. And then what happened is that I got in a fight with a friend of mine, and I tried to drive home from Wisconsin without enough gas and ended up on the pulling over into a gas station and calling my parents and just kind of telling them. I was bawling for an hour on the phone with them, telling them what was going on. And my dad came and got me, and my parents were super cool. They, called the insurance company, and I got into a hospital.
Were they still clueless, about how much you were drinking and using at this point?
Well, they were clueless as far as everything that was going on. And I told them everything that was going on that night that they came and got me from the gas station.
And they were 100% supportive, 100%?
Absolutely.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. But the kicker was, that gives me the chills now, is I had these little kits everywhere with a razor and a straw and a fold of crystal meth, one in my vanity at home, one in my car, one in my backpack, and one in my purse. So just in case one, I don't know, got lost or moved or whatever, I was okay with, because I had other stashes. And my mom, they didn't snoop, but she went into my room to look for something a month before I ended up going to the hospital and found my little kit.
Okay.
And didn't say anything to anybody. And she's religious, so she got down on her knees and prayed about it. And this came out when I went to treatment and had a family session.
But she never brought it up to you beforehand?
Never brought it up to me or my dad.
Do you think there was a sense of denial from your parents at all?
I'm sure.
Okay.
Nobody's had to deal with that before in my family, except for my older brother, who used to come home drunk in the middle of the night and belligerent. But
I mean, no parent wants to think of their son or daughter as a hardcore drug addict and alcoholic.
Right.
I mean, especially by the age of 17.
No, totally.
It's just something that nobody wants to ever deal with.
Yeah. No, and I don't think they didn't have a clue, really, and then they were supportive when they did find out, and I think a lot of the puzzle pieces fit together.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of things that, I mean, I had a double life by that point in time, and they didn't know anything that was going on. So I went to the hospital. It was a week long. They did an evaluation on me, and then I did outpatient treatment, and a lot of things lined up for me. I did the outpatient treatment for 11 and a half months, and part of that deal was that I had to go to a 12-step program and get a sponsor. I had to go through starting working the 12 steps, and I had to go through the first 5 steps in order to graduate from treatment. And part of doing that was with the 5th step, with going through and taking an inventory, moral inventory, and then reading it to somebody. I either had the choice of reading it to this chaplain who I didn't know, who was a guy. And at this point in time, when I came in, I didn't know I was going to stay sober. I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. And
Can you explain to the audience out there that, that may not necessarily be familiar with a 12-step program, what does that do for you? And maybe describe a little bit about taking inventory and then sharing it with someone else.
Well, part of it for me, especially, not especially, part of it for me, just starting from the beginning, was admitting that I was powerless over alcohol and, for me, drugs, and that my life was unmanageable.
That's the first step, right?
Yep. And I knew that I knew I was powerless. I didn't think my life was unmanageable because I was still getting up and going to calculus in the morning and taking physics. And I felt like everything looked okay from the outside, but then my teeth were falling apart, and it was, you know, my nose was bleeding mostly every morning when I woke up.
And especially that hole in your soul, like you talked about.
Yeah, I felt like an empty person. Mm. So the unmanageability, I kind of got it after I talked to this woman who I asked to be my sponsor, which is just somebody who brings you through the 12 steps. Second and third step in a 12-step program talks about coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And I knew that I was insane. I knew that I was crazy. I'd felt that, like that for years and years and years. So that wasn't a problem for me. The problem was is I didn't, the whole God, higher power stuff, I had a huge problem with because I grew up having to go to church and I didn't like the people. They were rude. And it gave me an impression of God that was not what I liked. But something that I learned was that I could start from the smallest little kernel of any sort of power greater than myself that I wanted, and then it grew from there. And for me, that happened because for the last couple months of me drinking and using drugs, I used to every night light candles in my room, and I forgot about this for a long time, but light candles in my room before I was going to sleep, or kind of while I was... I don't even know that I was going to sleep. I was going into like a Robitussin / Vicodin coma. And I would just ask, you know, whatever it was. I didn't think it was God. It was just whatever it was. I knew there was some sort of weird universal energy because all these coincidences had started to happen, to just kind of lead me down the right path. If that meant I had to make my own path, then I would.
Now, you said you were... You're in outpatient for 11 and a half months?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the whole time, you're living at your parents' house at this time?
Whole time, well, no, the first 3 months I got sober, I was living at my parents' house, and then the sober program had started up in a college in Minnesota.
Okay.
Where you had to be in a 12-step program, you had to have a sponsor, you had to be going to class, you couldn't be violent with other people, which, you know, for some of us is hard.
So that was a program within a college.
It was a program within a college, and we all got to live together, and it was...
That's interesting.
It was fun. It was crazy. I got to do... Because part of the thing for me is I thought if I did this thing and got sober and joined a 12-step program that my life was going to be over. I thought I wasn't going to have any fun anymore, which was for sure not the case, because my experience... My first year sober, when I moved into this dorm, I got to do all sorts of crazy things with all the other people who were brand new sober, too. So we didn't know what we were doing. I was 18, just barely, and, you know, we were all like 18 to 20.
Is that type of college program something that's popular throughout the United States or just the college you went to?
No, it was actually the first of its kind. It was the first year.
And where was this again?
It was in Minnesota at Augsburg College. It's just a small little college there.
Wow. I think that's really great that they do something like that.
It was awesome. I don't think I would have stayed sober without it because I was so used to... I always gravitated towards the people who were a little bit, who had a lot of stuff going on, who liked to drink, who liked to party, because that flirting with death piece for me was, I don't know, I was attracted to it.
Hmm.
But things started happening for me. I started dating my neighbor, which was funny. I got a sponsor. I started regularly going to 12-step meetings. I had gotten a sponsor, which is just somebody who brings me through the steps. And the fourth and fifth step talk about doing a moral inventory, which is basically just writing down all the people I was pissed off at and things that I was afraid of and going through it with that sponsor, which is the fifth step, just reading with her. And I didn't knew that I hadn't done anything more crazy than anybody else that I had listened to in the rooms, because I had heard already at that point quite a few things that were a little bit shocking to me. So I read it with her, and things just slowly started to change for me. I had finally, by living in this dorm, other people who were part of 12-step programs. We hung out a lot. And I don't know, I slowly just over time got, I felt like I came back into my body. I didn't feel that shell of a person anymore. I felt like I was able to be me, and learning how to be me and tell people what I thought and what I felt, and they didn't, like, they could have their own opinion and that was okay, but I didn't really have to take it in as my problem.
Right.
And I was showing up for school, doing the stuff I needed to do. I had a boyfriend, you know, and things from there on. I was 17 when I got sober, and I'm 28 now, so I've been sober for 10 years.
Cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. Over that period of time, a lot of stuff has happened, obviously, because life happens. A lot of ups and downs. I have depression, so in sobriety, that's popped up when I'm not taking care of myself. But it's been really, the people that I've met in AA have been amazing. And part of it for me has been the honesty, just being honest about where I'm at, and that's all right if I'm not feeling so great. But I've heard that saying, you know, my worst day drinking was my best day sober, or worst day sober is better than my worst day drinking. And I don't know that I necessarily agree, because I had a good time while I was drinking and doing drugs. But I have some tools today that I know how to deal with the days where I'm not feeling so great. And my highs and lows aren't as deep valleys or high mountains anymore.
Do you go to young people's meetings?
I do. I actually go to a meeting called Never Had a Legal Drink.
Okay. Where's that located?
It's in New York City, which is where I live.
Okay.
It's on Thursday nights, and it's a room of probably like 75 to 100 young people. Some of people are brand new sober and 14, 15. And then, you know, there's other people that are like me in their mid-20s. Middle 30s who have been sober for 10, 15 years.
And that's cool that you guys continue to go, even though you've been sober a long time and you're starting to come into your later 20s and approaching your 30s. And that's pretty cool that you continue to go back there.
It's totally. I love it. It's been awesome for me as far as meeting other people who are sober, and just kind of how to deal with life and still be sober and have fun.
Right.
And learn how to work. I came in and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I didn't, you know, learning how to work. It's like learning how to be an adult. I don't know how to do it. I'm still learning how to do it.
Jenny, what would you say to the young person who's out there listening to this tonight and just struggling with their addiction, not knowing what to do about it? What can you say to that person?
I don't know that there's any one thing that I can say, but let it flow. For me, the signs just kind of started to happen where it was time for me to, everything was over and I didn't know what to do, and everything opened up for me. The world just kind of opened up for me to get sober, and that's not what I was expecting to do. I was expecting to live in a trailer park with some moldy-toothed boyfriend for, you know, that was kind of what my plan.
Wearing a t-shirt that says, I'm with stupid.
Right. That was kind of the plan. So, yeah, that's what I would say. Let it flow.
Very cool.
The signs, just follow them.
We're going to leave it right there.
All right.
Really appreciate you being with us here tonight, and really appreciate your honesty.
Thank you.
Some stuff you touched on was took a lot of guts to be that honest on the radio. So we really appreciate you being with us.
Thanks.
Maybe we'll touch base later on in the show with you.
Maybe.
Thanks for being on Stepping Out. If you or someone you know needs help with a drinking problem, Alcoholics Anonymous is available. Reach out to them at AA.org. And if you want to connect with us, Stepping Out, our website is available 24 hours a day at 12stepmeeting.com.